yeah. That, of course, is the Electric Light Orchestra. For some reason, the last couple of weeks, I've picked that up and I haven't been able to stop listening to it. And it's really bizarre because it really shows my age. You know, ELO, not one of the bands you really think about when you think great 70s bands. You know, you think Zeppelin or whatever, but underappreciated, I think. So, you know, debate amongst yourselves on that. These are the big issues we're going to talk about here on the podcast. I actually pulled up to a stoplight today and was cranking a little ELO and got a laugh from whoever was next to me, the lady next to me. So, you know, turns your car into birth control on wheels at that point, really. Today, we are going to talk a little sports. We're going to talk with Dan Walsh of SportsBubbler.com. This is the first of what I hope will be many. Talking to Thunder Dan, who used to be Young Dan of the Jeff Wagner Show, if you were listening to that show. He was the one that that played all the good bumper music coming in. So we are going to talk little Packers, little Brewers, and maybe a little Badgers as well. So here he is, and Dan, are you there?
I am, in fact, here.
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm excellent, good sir. San Diego is calling, so I'm ready to get the hell out of Wisconsin.
Well, good. Now, you and I have a personal bone to pick.
Really?
This, to pick with you.
This isn't... Well, thanks for the warning on this.
Yeah, this is kind of an ambush.
Thanks, great, lovely.
As it turns out, your wife is not a fan of mine.
That is something that is true. She saw you on Sunday Insight with Charlie Sykes this past weekend and saw you stumbling and bumbling on one of the questions, and she's like, who is that guy?
And she's just
what
out
is he
now.
Doing on TV?
What do I have to do? What do I have to do to win her back?
Well,
I guess not win her back, because I never won her over in the first place.
That's true. I probably not stumbling and bumbling on Sykes's panel, but the way you're stumbling and bumbling, you may not end up back on that show. Charlie will not let you on, I bet.
This is a horrible call so far. Well, you know, just tell her, you know, if I need to send her flowers or something, you know,
well,
I'm gonna win her back.
I've been accused of not doing that early enough. So if you send them with my name on it, then you would score points with both myself and her.
No, I don't think that's gonna happen.
You can come down and, you know, put some track lighting in my basement if you want. That would score points with her.
Well, good. All right. What do you want to talk about first? First of all, let's talk a little bit about you.
Okay. I'm not very good about talking about myself.
Yeah. Learn a little bit about you, a little bit about me.
All right. Well, I'll start off with
a little bit about ourselves.
All right. Very well. It's the first pantsless, the Chris Schneider, sportsbubbler.com, pantsless podcast. And we figured if it's the first one, we might as well at least talk about ourselves, about where we got where we are now.
It really is the meeting of the Titans.
It is. And who knew the Smoking Popes were one of the main reasons that happened?
Yeah, so it was just some post I did on the Smoking Popes that got you excited? Or
I don't remember exactly. It was back in your Dennis York days.
Sure.
And I posted a comment from Young Dan, and then you complimented me on all my use of cool bumper music from Jeff Wagner's show from back in the day.
Yeah, I don't think Jeff Wagner is sitting there listening to all this good music, so I knew somebody behind the scenes had to be doing all this. So
I was the one trying to keep him sounding hip with the music.
So you'd play the bumper music, and Jeff would just look at you and say, what in the hell is that? Or
that would pretty much happen at least two or three times a show.
Yeah?
And then usually maybe once a week someone would ask me who that music was coming out, and you know whether it'd be the Jayhawks or Lucinda Williams, I'd get a call maybe once every couple weeks thanking me for putting cool music on Jeff's show.
Well, good.
So that was always kind of fun. I really enjoyed doing that.
So Jeff was really looking for something like ELO.
He would much like that, or like Blues Brothers, or I mean.
Okay, so now what is sportsbubbler.com? Even though most of the people listening to this are probably going to come from sportsbubbler.com, so they already know
I would
it
think.
Is.
Well, you've got your diehard 7 or 8 readers too, don't you?
That's right. They're going to be jamming up the bandwidth.
They are
all at once. The internet is literally going to shut down. No porn for anyone for like all night, just because the internet's going to shut down.
We're going to piss off a lot of people because of that. I'll have to answer your question here.
All right, go ahead.
Sports Bubbler, if you play around with it, you'll pretty much notice we try to cover basically every possible team in the state. Packers, Brewers, Bucks, Wisconsin Lutheran College, Ripon. I mean, we basically try to cover every single team that's out there and give them their fair share of coverage. You know, obviously some of the bigger teams are more popular with us. The Brewers have been a big success with us. We've got a lot of great Brewers bloggers, Packers bloggers. So it's sort of a storing house for a whole bunch of different teams and blogs and just sort of a fan playground.
I'm a little disappointed so far, I got to be honest, in your coverage of Wisconsin women's basketball.
They have a team?
No, it's Badgerball, man. Here in Madison.
We did great coverage of the men's team this past week. Did you check out all the interviews we did?
Yes, absolutely.
And the reason we haven't done women's coverage is because they haven't even had their media day yet.
Really?
Well, I believe that's next week, so.
See, I see extensive coverage of the Australian women's team. But that's only because there are, like, naked pictures of Lauren Jackson on there.
Well, do you blame us on that?
She's, like, 6'10".
And you would love every inch of it, Chris.
Hey, now. What? Where's this going?
I have no idea. You're the one without pants on.
Well, that is true. All right, so we are... What are we going to talk about? Obviously, the big story right now.
Big story of the week has been the Favre.
Favregate. So what are you saying about this? What are your readers saying about this? What do you got?
The opinion I find from most people is they're sick and tired of Brett and talking out of both sides of his mouth, and they're tired of, you know, people speaking for him instead of him coming out and speaking, and him, you know, using his buddies at ESPN or you know, his brother speaking to the media, and I really think they're just sick and tired of Favre.
Yeah, this whole ESPN thing has kind of become the whole story, the fact that they wouldn't cover it.
Yeah.
Because of all his boys there. I mean, this is like a Watergate-style cover-up. There should be some kind of congressional investigation.
And you know,
keeping the public in the dark.
Absolutely. And then, you know, ESPN is, you know, claiming, you know, they needed to verify the story first before they ran with it. And, I mean, ESPN has a long, long track record of completely botching breaking stories and whether it be actually true or not. So the fact that all of a sudden someone else did the story, they're not going to recognize it. I mean, even today Dick Vitale was out saying that Lute Olson was going to retire, and he was quitting the team. And then ESPN or other people called up the University of Arizona, and they're like, that's news to us. Lute hasn't told us a thing about that. So the fact that, you know, they're running with other people's stories that may or may not be true or not, it just shows the incredible hypocrisy of ESPN.
Well, the amazing thing about Favre is that, you know, today he's backtracking, and he's saying, well, you know, maybe I did talk with them, and maybe I talked with them about the Packers, but I didn't give them any inside info. I mean, you said earlier that he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. I mean, that presumes that he's telling the truth at all.
Which on either side, is. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He's never on the truthful side of whatever he's doing, and it's just so depressing. I mean, we went through this all in this whole thing in the off season where it was just depressing. And as you may recall, I was at, you know, I went on TV and I gave some teary goodbye Brett thing, and now it's just so embarrassing just because he's such a fraud.
And I think people are just burned out. They're just sick of it. Whether he did it or whether he didn't do it, I think they're just tired of the back and forth of who's at fault more on this sort of thing. I really think they're just burned out on him, and they're just sick and tired of the he said, she said sort of thing.
Well, the thing that aggravates me to no end is the national media. Like, you know, he calls up his boy, Peter King. Actually, this started during the summer where, you know, reports are out there, and I think it may have even been Jay Glazer who reported, you know, the story on Matt Millen, or calling up the Lions. And so Favre calls up Peter King, and he says, oh, no, it's not absolutely not true. Peter King's like, oh, well, it's absolutely not true, and guess what? It's true. So now Peter King in his Monday morning column says, you know, if these Favre allegations are true, and I don't believe that they are, and of course he gets a text message from Brett saying they're not true, when in fact
they are partially true. You know, it all didn't.
He even admits they're at least partially true. And so Peter Kango says, well, you know, this is going to damage his reputation in Wisconsin. Well, so it's not going to damage his reputation with the sycophantic media that cover, you know, hang on his every word? I mean,
I even think the ESPN people are probably starting to get a little annoyed with Favre.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that they continue to protect him like nobody's business, and they, at this point they continue to get burned by Jay Glazer on every single story that they've been doing. I mean, they had four or five different reporters hanging out right outside Brett's house practically, and I think it was, I can't remember the ESPN reporter's name, but she was like tracking Favre left and right, and there's Jay Glazer, the one that actually broke the story that he was going to the Jets.
Yeah, and then he gives an interview to Greta Von Susteren or whatever her name is.
Wisconsin's finest.
That really had to chap like Peter King's ass. But
oh, absolutely. And you could even start to tell, you know, in Peter King's column this past week that, you know, he was starting to get a little tired of Brett's antics. You know, he's, he kind of hinted, well, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire in regards to what Brett was accused of doing. So I think even Peter King might be coming around on this issue that Brett may not be the saint that he's been able to portray himself as over the last 16 years.
Well, yeah, it's about time. I mean, because Brett played him like a fiddle over the summer. You know, mm-hmm. Peter King was essentially Brett's, you know, his press release. Anytime you wanted to get anything out, you just send a text message to Peter King or whatever. And of course, in every time Peter King's on TV, he's got to say, you know what, I just got off the phone with LaDainian Tomlinson. It's like, you know, your job is to talk to people on the phone. We know you talk to him, so you don't have to say it.
Yeah,
he's just an idiot. Anyway, so he you'd think he'd figure out that Brett totally played him over the summer, and that might somehow change their relationship. But then here he is, Brett, you know, he's right back defending Favre.
Yeah,
he plays him again, and then now, well, you know, fool me twice, now maybe he may not be the saint.
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah, I'm curious who Peter King will find his next man crush on, now that Favre is possibly over with.
It's ridiculous. I always joke with my friend Mike that I wonder how Peter King finds time to type his column, since his hands are usually busy. I don't know how to say this on the podcast. Let's say giving Brett a massage.
Mm-hmm. That's a safe way to say it, sure.
He's putting the lotion in the basket for Brett. Well, here's, I mean, when you look at Favre, here's a guy that clearly nobody's ever said no to him in 20 years. And, you know, one of the main things that everybody loved about him on the field, you know, Madden and all these guys, just fall in love with him because he plays like a kid on the field, and, you know, he's got that youthful exuberance, but it's apparent now that he's
a kid off the field as well.
Yes, he's an 8-year-old off the field because he's vindictive and he's, you know, he's immature and,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And he's just petty on little different things, and it's just.
Right, the same things that made him, you know, such a great football player don't necessarily translate to his interpersonal dealings. And, you know, it's, people forget, and, you know, you don't want to go back and trash the guy in retrospect. But, I mean, you know, he had his problems. It seems like everybody, you go to any tavern in Wisconsin and someone's got a story about the time that, you know,
Favre came in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Favre came in, got wasted, left with a couple waitresses. And,
yep.
You know, everybody's got a story like that. And then he had the whole, you know, he and Chewy are hitting the town, and
we know about that.
You know, he had the whole thing with the painkillers and all that kind of stuff. And because he's our guy, everybody's like, well, you know, he's a warrior and all that kind of stuff.
Rally behind him.
But now you look back at it in retrospect with all the crap that he's pulling now, and it's just like, maybe he's just a guy that, you know, he just refuses to grow up.
I couldn't disagree with that for a second. What I was surprised with, what I found really fascinating, was how quickly some of his current teammates or former teammates with the Packers, like Charles Woodson, were so quickly to pile on him when they were, you know, given the information that he might have spilled some beans to the Lions. You know, Woodson was out pretty much telling him how much he didn't respect that or anything along those lines, and how quickly they were ready to jump on Favre for selling him out like that.
Absolutely, because they all believe that he's capable of doing it. I mean, mm-hmm. they all know him better than anyone. So there's obviously something going on there where they would go out and trash him right off the bat like that, because, I mean, they're probably just as sick of hearing about this crap as everybody else is.
Oh, absolutely. They're tired of even talking about it. And, you know, I think they always felt probably, too, that Brett cared about one person, and that was only about Brett Favre. You know, as much as he talked about loving his teammates, he cared about one and only one person. That was Brett himself. I mean, he never taught Aaron Rodgers diddly squat when he was the number one QB. Aaron just had to kind of learn whatever he could, because Brett sure as hell wasn't going to give him any sort of secrets or anything along those lines.
Of all the people that probably deserve credit that aren't getting credit right now, you'd think Mike McCarthy should get a little credit, or Ted Thompson as well. I know all the Favre haters out there, you know, detest the guys, but you remember, it was just maybe, what, 2 years ago that the team was 4-12 and just sinking.
Despite having one of the youngest teams in the NFL for, I think, probably the second or third straight year, they continue to, I think, show signs of progress.
Yeah, people forget that St. Brett, you know, led a team to a 4-12 record just a couple of years ago. So, I mean, it's all a function of the team that he has around him, and it's pretty clear that they put a pretty darn good team around him right now.
And they continue to supply the young talent. I mean, if you look what, you know, Ted did in Seattle and what's happened to Seattle since Ted Thompson has left, I'll take Ted Thompson any day over practically any GM. I sure as heck don't want Mike Sherman back again. I mean, he's doing a terrible job at Texas A&M, so I have no problem with him no longer being the GM of the Packers.
Yeah.
And, you know, and with this whole Matt Millen and giving the story to Jay Glazer, it pretty much keeps Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy out of the blame game for once on the Favre thing. You know, a lot of people blamed McCarthy and Ted Thompson for how everything went down with Favre earlier. And there's really, you know, they're pretty much, their hands are clean of this story.
Yeah, I mean, they end up looking pretty good in the whole deal. All right, so let's talk Brewers.
We're not going to talk. You got to explain about who the heck you are. I talked about, you know, producing Jeff Wagner's show and doing all that stuff. People don't know who the hell you are now that we've talked about the Packers for 20 minutes.
Well, let's see. I didn't expect to be interviewed on my own podcast. Let's see. I was I attended the Virginia Tech for a couple of years.
Would that be the Virginia Tech?
That's right. It's a school full of nothing but upstanding citizens that occasionally electrocute dogs and shoot guns in McDonald's. That would be Marcus Vick. I don't know if you remember him.
Oh, it's...
But that would also be the school that beat the Nebraska Cornhuskers a couple weeks ago. I don't know if...
The memory does not collect that incident at all.
Then I finished up school. I transferred and finished at the University of Utah, where I worked for the basketball team there as a manager for a couple of years.
Were you there in the Bogut years?
I was not there. I was, and this is going to, again, this is going to date me, but I left before Bogut got there. I was, my first year there was Keith Van Horn's first year there.
Did you ever
be a lot more impressive than it is now.
Did you ever go visit Majerus in his hotel room?
I did. You know, every now and then, part of the job was taking him his dry cleaning and stuff and bringing him food. So
he never answered the door in just a towel, did he?
You know, these are all personal things. That Sports Illustrated article came out, what was it, about a year ago now?
Yeah, about a year or two, yeah.
About him, and I'd have to say it was uncomfortably accurate. And it's you know, it's strange that a lot of his ex-players would open up like that. I mean, it's, you know, usually there are a lot of...
they protect their old coach.
Well, yeah, it's because, you know, he's really tough to work for and play for when you're there. But he will absolutely bend over backwards. I mean, he'll kill himself trying to help you once you leave. And so I think a lot of the players, you know, whether it's whatever help they need, getting a job or going to the NBA or going to play in Europe, whatever it is, I mean, he's always there to help. So it's a little strange that, you know, some of these stories came out after the fact, but, you know, it was a good time while I was there. Then I ended up in Wisconsin, went to grad school at Marquette, the Harvard of the Midwest, and...
really, my degree didn't say that from there.
And ended up working in the state legislature for 8 years, and now I write for the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, so I'm a political guy for those of you new to the to my writings and et cetera. So,
but atomic trousers, you know, always would hit sports quite a bit with a nice perspective.
Anything that I wanted to complain about, it's always on there. You know, it's good outlet to have.
Yeah. All right, so move on to Brewers now. We're just getting tired of listening to you.
I'm surprised you didn't get tired a long time ago. All right, what? They're going to hire a new manager here pretty soon.
That's the rumor here. It sounds like it's down to three candidates. Which one do you want? Bob Brenly, Ken Maka, or Willie Randolph?
I actually did a little research on this, and I'm not of the opinion that managers make all that big of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at some of these managers that are out there. How can you really tell if they're going to be a good manager, or whether they, you know, they're going to mesh with your team or whatever? I mean, you just look. You need to look no further than the World Series right now. I mean, you got Charlie Manuel who's managing in the World Series. Now, who would have thought a couple of years ago when he was with Cleveland that, you know, he was going to end up taking a team to the World Series, or even Joe Maddon for that fact? I mean,
he's got the Georgian fly glasses going for him, and
sure.
I mean, managers for the most part, I got to imagine, are pretty much just a complete crapshoot. I mean, nobody in their right mind would have really thought that Charlie Manuel, who was, you know, 80 when Cole Hamels was first born, would be able to actually help out and you know, get that team where they are.
Yeah, here's a list of the managers that have been in the World Series in the last couple of years. You got Terry Francona versus Clint Hurdle. Clint Hurdle's career managerial record was 464 before, even including this year. The year before that, you had Tony La Russa, Jim Leland. Of course, both of them have won one championship, so they're pretty solid there. The mm-hmm. year before, you had Ozzie Guillen and Scrap Iron, Phil Garner. I mean, what planet are we living on that Phil Garner actually took a team to the World Series?
That blows my mind.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, would you hire Phil Garner right now?
Absolutely not. Absolutely
Phil
not.
Phil probably on the phone with Bob Melvin right now saying, I was in the World Series. See, so I don't understand really, you know, what that has to do with anything. Jack McKeon took over early in the season in 03 with the Marlins and took on Joe Torre in the World Series. Now, Joe Torre is an interesting case, and it kind of makes my point. 538 career winning percentage. Before he got to the Yankees and he had the payroll that he had, he was a 471 manager. I mean, he was a losing manager his entire career before he got to the Yankees. So, I mean, that leads me to believe, and, you know, you give him a $100 million payroll and suddenly the guy becomes a genius.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, that's why I think picking a manager, for the most part, it is really, truly a crapshoot. And that's why I don't think they ever let Yost go sooner, was because I don't know if they really saw anybody who would really do any better with those guys.
Yeah. I mean, I was as critical as anybody of Yost, especially when he's, like, you know, plunking Albert Pujols with the pennant on the line, or the division on the line. But, you know, you got to look at him this year and say he did coach him to, what was it, they were about 18 over 500 right before, you know, a few games before he got fired. So, I mean, he must have been doing something right.
He was just incredibly lucky. I wonder how close they were really ready to fire him in, you know, back in May when Harder Court sort of blew up with Badger Blogger with that whole fiasco as well. You wonder how close they really were ready to fire him because, you know, they had seen struggles and they were tired of it. You know, they saw it in September last year and they saw enough of it this year to realize that he wasn't the guy to take him to the next level.
Yeah, see, I mean, there are all kinds of things where you watch a Brewer game and you just scream at the TV when Yost is managing. It's like, you know, we realize you're a player's manager, but for God's sake, when you're down a run in the eighth inning, bunt the guy over.
I mean, well, you know, even when they tried to, though, I mean, there was one game where Corey Hart was up to bat, and he couldn't lay down the bunt. He was unable to freaking lay down one of the most basic things. I mean, that's the most frustrating thing, is that team could never seem to play smart, basic, fundamental baseball.
Yeah, I mean, it was... Here's the one managerial move, and this is, you know, I'm always skeptical when fans come out of nowhere with these crackpot theories, and so this is one of mine. So if I were not me, I'd probably be critical of me for having this theory. But Jason Kendall, if in case you haven't noticed, he cannot hit the ball out of the infield.
He's tired from catching 400 games this year.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
He had 500 during April, and then he nothing the rest of the year. So
you've got Mike Rivera on the bench, fresh legs, fresh bats, absolutely everything, and they'll let Kendall come up there and ground
him. Late in the game, every time they let Kendall bat for himself. Now, I can understand the manager saying, well, you know, we can't use our quote-unquote emergency catcher in case something happens, but, I mean, Kendall's an automatic out in that situation. Rivera can actually hit. So what is the damage in putting Rivera in to hit for Kendall? You know, the chances of you having to go to a catcher beyond Rivera are so remote, but the chances of Kendall grounding into a double play are 90%.
Right, and with how little Rivera played, you know, the guy probably could have caught 20 straight innings. So if he had an extra inning game, it's not like that big of a deal. I'm pretty sure Rivera calls just as good a game as Kendall, despite what a lot of the players or the pitchers thought.
Well, yeah, I mean, even if he catches the last inning, you know, if you're still down, I mean, what difference does it make? But, you know, it's just stuff like that. Maybe Jason Kendall's sensitive and, you know, he'd get really hacked off if they pinch hit for him. But, I mean stuff like that. Especially late in the season after you expand to your 40-man roster and you've got a third catcher sitting there just in case. But still, you know, in a couple of those late games when they're trailing, you know, you just watch it and you see – actually, Cameron was leading off. But you see, like – Weeks and Kendall and Hart come up back to back to back, and it's just like, oh my God.
You can go off and, you know, lay track lighting in your basement for 20 minutes because you know nothing's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, it just boggles the mind.
Right. And for, you know, for Tony Gwynn to be sitting there on the bench while Corey Hart is single-handedly euthanizing the season.
Well, I think that just showed what, you know, if Gabe Kapler would have stayed healthy.
Right.
You wonder if they would have just flat-out benched Hart and gave up on him and thrown Kapler in there to help do something to that offense, because Hart was just awful.
Yeah, that was a huge injury. Now, I don't have the stat in front of me. I probably actually should, but I believe Corey Hart's on-base percentage for the second half of the season, not his batting average, mind you, but his on-base percentage was like 192 or something like that. I'll look it up, but I think it was below 200.
It was awful. It was awful. Back to Jason Kendall, I think he caught more games this season than any catcher has in the last, I want to say, 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's, and he's not a spring chicken. I mean, even, you know, when Mike Piazza started getting up to be that age, I mean, that's when he had to call it quits.
Yeah.
I mean, the legs just don't last that long, so... you know, that's just one of the many complaints. I mean, there were all kinds of things where, you know, you can disagree with the manager over whether he should bunt a guy over, or whether he should hit and run, or, you know, all
right,
that kind of stuff.
But playing Kendall was just, I don't get that.
Yeah, or, you know, playing Hart those last few games, or even in the playoff games, I mean, it's...
Just somebody, anybody different than what that was.
You remember in the last, what was it, the last game of the season, or maybe the second to last, where there's one out and Corey Hart comes up, and you know, you're just yelling at the TV. It's like him striking out here is the most predictable thing
you know, anything remotely low and outside, and he's going to swing and miss. I mean, I think Corey Hart's become the new Jeff Jenkins for us, where you know he's going to swing at that pitch, and you hope he doesn't, yet every single time he swings, and he misses the ball by 4 feet.
Yeah. They should have awarded Jenkins first base if he got within 2 feet of a curveball from a left-hander. I mean, that's how bad it got at the end. You got to give the guy credit. He played here a long time, and he played hard and all that stuff. He refused to change his approach at the plate and, you know, cut down on the swing a little bit.
Yeah.
That's another thing with the Brewers this year is, I mean, how many strikeouts can you tolerate from one team? I mean, you know, they go on and on about how Mike Cameron is a veteran.
That will be the biggest waste of $10 million if they bring him back again. They have enough guys swing for the fences. Yeah, I mean, they have enough guys that do that. They don't need another one for $10 million.
But they talk about all of his veteran leadership and all that. What part of veteran leadership strikes out one out of every three at-bats? I mean, is he teaching the youngsters that? Come over here and sit on my lap, and I'll show you how you can. He's got a pipe in. Here's what you do.
Story time with Mike.
Yeah. To his credit, he actually did pick it up a little bit at the end of the year, but
he did. But man, Swaim didn't deserve the job for putting Cameron in the leadoff spot to begin with. But that's just that was a horrible decision to do that.
But when you got when you've got Weeks and you've got Cameron and you've got Corey Hart and those guys who are just, you know, striking out every four or five at bats. And in fairness, Braun and Fields strike out quite a bit too. But you know, with the production that they put up, you can actually justify that. But that actually brings me back to Ken Maka.
Yes, our manager discussion.
Yeah, we. I pulled out little bit from his Oakland days, and you remember, Oakland was not a high payroll team. You know, it's the whole Moneyball theory of you know, getting up there, making contact, moving runners over, and that kind of deal. And in his four full seasons there, he won 96, 91, 88, and 93 games, playing with a low payroll, you know, just by getting players to, do kind of the fundamental stuff that that the whole Moneyball system kind of made, the whole Billy Bean system kind of made famous.
Now, I'd love to see that, but with the players that we have, are they capable of playing the small ball game? I don't think they are.
Well, I mean, you got to get a guy maybe I'm too in love with like Tony Gwynn, but I think he's a guy that needs to play. I mean, he's a contact hitter. Throughout the season, you think of he's exactly the type of guy that the Brewers need, a guy that makes contact, who's got speed, you know, who's not going to strike out and kill an inning. And, you know, I know people argue, well, you know, even if he's making contact, he can still hit into double plays and stuff like that. But it just seemed too many strikeouts just euthanized too many innings. And it was, you know, that's why the offense struggled. If you kept him from hitting a home run, it was a done deal.
Yeah. I'm not sold on Gwynn. I got to believe that there's a reason the team never thought or hasn't thought that he could be a legitimate everyday center fielder.
Yeah.
So I'll take their faith in that he's not the answer.
Well, I mean, what happens to Corey Hart and what happens to Ricky Weeks and, you know, what happens to Trenny? I mean, are they going to bring Trenny back?
Well, Trenny's going to be doing some Bucks games this year on FSN, so she's going to be back doing that, and I think she just ran like a half marathon or a marathon too. You know, when you're friends with her on Facebook and she puts those in her, you know, status updates, it allows me to keep up with Trenny. She hasn't sent me an email in about a month or so I must have annoyed her in some way.
Oh, you're on the outs.
Apparently, you know.
Well, I noticed, I actually did check out her Facebook page, and I am ashamed to admit that I'm actually friends with her. It's kind of a long, sordid story, kind of a bet I had with a friend. Anyway.
There was numerous times we were out drinking back in our Marquette days, because she was numerous ones of my broadcasting classes.
Well, there were numerous times I wished she was playing instead of Corey Hart. Swaim should have looked down the bench, just be like, Trenny. Grab a bat.
You can't do any worse than Cart.
Yeah, at least he's not going to swing at the first pitch and
ground into a double play and kill any momentum.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's got like 1,000 friends on Facebook, and anytime she posts anything, like her status or anything, she gets like 50 people like commenting on it.
How much of them are?
Like, these guys are just sitting there waiting.
And how many of those guys are 30 plus single men?
Wisconsin's least wanted. The ranks of her Facebook friends and the unemployed in Wisconsin, I think, are pretty high. If you went through like the unemployment insurance lists and her friend list, I think it's probably
there's gonna be a couple matches. Yeah.
All right, so I'm kind of sold on Maka. He actually, in looking at a couple...
No, he did turn down the job back in the day when they gave it to Yost. Does that bother you, that a guy who didn't want the job when the team wasn't very good and didn't have the talent, now that they do have the talent, one now wants to be the manager? Do you have a problem with that?
From what I understand, he left on pretty bad terms in Oakland because he was not what you consider to be a player's manager. Let's see. I'll just read this passage for you. The San Francisco Chronicle, citing team sources, reported earlier Monday that Maka's job was in jeopardy due to his trouble communicating with players and his callous attitude towards injured players. So he got, from what I read, he had guys like Rich Harden who'd get injured, and then he'd publicly call them out for being
soft
sissies. Yeah, and they did not like that at all. But it seems like kind of a 180, you know, getting a red-assed manager in there would be a 180 from a guy like, you know, Yost or Swaim, who always claimed to be, you know, players' managers, that, you know, nothing ever really changes. So,
but, you know, it sounded like, you know, at the reason they got fired was because in September, Yost wasn't talking to anybody at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody knew what to do, and everybody tensed up because Yost wasn't saying anything. So I wonder if Maka's in that same line where they're going to have trouble communicating because he's not as open and honest as some of those guys.
Yeah, and one of the main criticisms of him in his tenure in Oakland was that they were getting to the postseason every year and getting swept. Like, I mean, they got swept by Boston one year, and that I think that was the year that cost him his job because they had high hopes. But on the other hand, they're getting to the postseason every year with a not so hot payroll. I mean, look at those are the years where he had guys like Zito and Mulder and Hudson. And aside from Hudson, you know, what are those guys doing?
No, they're not
outside of Oakland.
Yeah, they're not doing anything. Now, does Maka keep Mike Maddux around? Do you think Maddux is willing to stick around?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it probably all depends on whether Maddux is chap that he didn't get an interview, or whether he secretly wanted to be manager, or whether, you know, what kind of relationship he's got with Swaim and Yost, or. Who was the Packers defensive coordinator who, when they
Jim
got
Bates.
Rid of Sherman,
Jim Bates.
Yeah, and he was so hacked off that they didn't consider him. He just jumped ship. He's like, I'm out.
And now he's currently unemployed. I believe. I'm almost positive he's unemployed. Now, do you think now that Jack Grzelanik is the Seattle GM and they need a manager, does he hire Yost?
Hey, someone hired Phil Garner. I mean, that's all I got
to
say.
You hired Cecil Cooper to be their manager. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I mean, Scrap Iron ended up in the World Series, so, I mean, really, anything can happen. Davey Lopes is still coaching in the league somewhere.
You know who I think he's coaching for? I think he's the Phillies' first base coach.
Yeah. That's probably why I saw him fairly recently.
Yeah. It was amazing. He's got a... I was still boggles my mind the game where he went out to the pitcher's mound to yell at Ricky Henderson for stealing second base like in the eighth or ninth inning of a game when it was like 7-0.
He broke the code.
Yeah,
he broke the code. Yeah. I'd love to see all these rules written down somewhere. The code.
They're somewhere.
Yeah.
Let's see. We'd stop by Gilly's one day and hang out with Bud, having a burger and some custard and see if he can give you a rundown of some of these rules.
Yeah, what the code is.
Yeah.
All right, so let's see. You want to talk Badgers at
sure.
all?
Sure.
You're going to know a little more about the Badgers than I am. So
I doubt that.
Just go ahead.
I doubt that.
Take.
They pretty much suck, and that's about it.
I saw a Fire Brett Bielema group crop up on Facebook, which I think is just preposterous. I mean, come on.
The guy is, yeah, sure. He's. What's his career record as the Badgers coach? Have a winning percentage of like 850 or something.
Yeah. When did the Badgers become such a powerhouse that, you know, they lose a couple games and then suddenly, I mean, of course there are going to be yahoos that kind of do this. It just takes one person to set some nonsense like this.
Absolutely.
Up,
but, you know, I said this on Dennis Krause's Time Warner roundtable show that, you know, I really think that Brett, when Bielema was talking earlier this year on why he bailed on the Virginia Tech game, was saying, you know, he didn't want to play all those games back to back to back. Well, and you know what? The players think that, probably think the same thing too. You know what? Coach doesn't think we're tough enough to handle these games. that's my conspiracy theory on this one, is that I think the players, when Coach was saying, you know, I didn't want to play all those tough games back to back to back, he told those players, more or less, that they're not tough enough to handle a tough schedule like that.
Well, in that case, you'd be right, because they are not tough enough to play the Almighty Hokies.
The Almighty Hokies or
the Almighty Hokies that just lost last week to Boston College and have absolutely no passing game. They're playing Tyrod Taylor, who might actually be throwing with the wrong arm. And nobody's telling him. Anyway.
I think that Michigan loss really started to cause some doubts in those players' minds. The fact that they were able to get blown away in the second half by a really bad Michigan team. I mean, Michigan lost to Toledo at home. So that tells me that Wisconsin has some serious issues. And it's not just Everidge at quarterback or even Dustin Scherer at quarterback. I mean, it is a team-wide problem. Now, you know, I think a lot of people expected – you know, a drop-off from the Alvarez years. But I just don't think they expected it to happen this quickly and this badly.
Yeah, was it the Penn State game that they lost by so much? That they just got bombed?
No, Ohio State, they were winning. They were beating Ohio State. And Terrell Pryor, I believe, took one in in the final minutes, and that's what sealed the deal.
That's right.
Because Steve's on Blue Mound shuttle coming back from the Brewers playoff game, and that game was being played on the radio.
Wisconsin is really weird, and I've thought about this, and I've tried to think of another type of situation where Marquette fans are forced to be sports bigamists, and if they want to root for a football team, then they have to cross over and root for the Badgers. So, you know, you go to a Badger Marquette game and where you're gold, and then you show, you know, the next week you're at a football game, you know, wearing your red. And it's really kind of strange. I'm trying to think of another situation where there's like a top 25 worthy private school, kind of small Catholic private school team with no football team.
Well, you know, where I grew up in Omaha, you've got Creighton with no football team, and then you've got Nebraska just down the road, an hour away, being the big boys in town. And you know, there's a lot of Creighton basketball fans that are Nebraska football fans. And I mean, that's a pretty easy comparison, I think.
Yeah, it's really strange that, you know, someone would be so gung ho about Marquette basketball, and then equally as gung ho about Badger football. But I guess that's the way it's got to be. Little crossing the streams there. All right. Anything else? You got anything else?
I got nothing, man. I'm ready to be in sunny San Diego when most people are listening to this podcast. So
we've got another couple hours. You want to do a big Bucks preview?
Who are they?
Yeah, they're just invisible.
Yeah, they're with the down economy, that team is, I tell you, the Bucks are in a world of hurt attendance-wise. Unless they start winning right away, that people don't care about that team now. I can't imagine what it's going to be like if they can't win any games to start the season.
Yeah. I am cautiously optimistic about the Bucks for some reason. I don't know why. I was so down on the E draft pick, and then when I found out that they got Richard Jefferson, an all-star, for E, and on top of it got to unload Bobby Simmons' killer contract, I mean, that was just kind of icing on
the cake. I mean, I think they'll be better, but I think the Eastern Conference is just stacked, absolutely stacked. I think the Heat are going to be a ton better with Beasley. Obviously, Cleveland now with Mo Williams is going to be a solid team. I just think, and with the Celtics again, I just think the East is.
You think Mo Williams is going to carry Cleveland?
Possibly.
With every point guard playing against him scoring, mm-hmm. scoring 35.
Yeah.
Williams guy?
I'm happy that he's no longer on the Bucks, but I think he'll actually fit well into the Cavaliers. I really do.
See, the Bucks, this is kind of a case study in why I'm kind of down on sports journalism. After the season, everything's all done, you find out that like Mo Williams and Michael Redd hated each other's guts.
Report that.
Why didn't you tell us that? Yeah, I mean, where is that during the season? I mean, are they afraid that information like that is going to depress, you know, people from going to the game? Or, you know, why do we have to find out about all this going on after the fact, after Williams is out of town? I mean,
are they just trying to protect their sources? They don't want the players pissed at them so they can continue to get inside information? You know, that's I don't quite get that.
Yeah, granted, I mean, these guys have to walk in the locker room and talk to these guys, and obviously they want to keep the info coming, so they don't want to hack them off. But I mean, you got to wonder what some of these guys know that they're unwilling to, you know, let the fans in on. So, all right, we are going to end this with a song of
apparently,
your choice.
Apparently, I do get the song of choice, and since it randomly popped up on iTunes, we're going to go with the latest one from the Killers. Their song. Human from their album Whenever the Heck It Comes Out. I'm not sure which, but I like it, so that's what we're...
So it's not out and you already have it? Is this some kind of nefarious...
I can't tell you where I got... No. It's the single's available on iTunes, so I downloaded it, and that's what we're going with this week, because that's been playing a lot on the iTunes, and it's one of the songs on iTunes or on my iPod that doesn't have any swear words in that we can get away with using here.
I'm going to break some news when you're in prison for downloading illegal music. That shouldn't have come out yet. All right. Well, thanks for being on the
I appreciate our first attempt at the Sports Bubbler Chris Schneider Pantsless podcast. It's off to a good start, I think. And hopefully we'll do this every week.
All right. Enjoy San Diego.
Yeah.
That's where you're going, right?
All right, thanks, Chris.
All right, have fun.
I did my best to notice when the call came down the line. Up to the platform of surrender, I was brought but I was kind. And sometimes I get nervous when I see an open door. Close your eyes, clear your heart. Cut the cord. Are we human? Or are we dancer? My sign is vital. My hands are cold. And I'm on my knees looking for the answer. Are we human? Or are we dancer? Send my condolences to good. mine is vital. My hands are cold, and I'm on my knees looking for the answer. You gotta let me know, are we human? Dancer, are we human, or are we dancer?